It's January 5th, 2012. This is The Hell Yeah Show. Hello and welcome to The Hell Yeah Show. I'm Alan.
I'm Emery.
And we are bringing you best practices for fine living, advice on how to not let technology ruin your day. Emery.
Would you like the protection plan?
Always. I would always like the protection plan. You can never go wrong with a protection plan.
Protection is very important.
You're fully protected.
At all times.
At all times.
For 2 years.
For a limited amount of time. Yeah. We're going to talk about Best Buy later in the show, because there was a recent Forbes article about how Best Buy is basically doomed, which is, I think, something we can probably corroborate here.
Yeah. I'm not at all sad about that.
No, I don't think either of us are. But the show title is, Would You Like a Protection Plan? We were talking about protection plans before the show, and I brought up the fact that apparently AppleCare is now something you buy.
My recommendation for everybody always was that you always get it on a notebook.
Hmm.
Like there was a time where I wouldn't have bothered suggesting it for a desktop, mm-hmm. just because, I mean, the odds of anything going, you know, but nowadays, like, most of the desktops are, you know, an iMac, which is an all-in-one thing, so why not?
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I mean, my thought process on the portables was that, first of all, it helps keep the resale value high when you resell it, and if you're not someone that does like a lot of churn, it's not such a big deal. But mm-hmm. A laptop is something that you're going to get thrown around a lot. There's more opportunity for something to get banged up.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, my current laptop is having graphics difficulties that I've talked about, and fortunately, I think those are going to be even covered out of warranty. But certainly, I think probably next time I buy a computer, I'm buying the AppleCare.
Yep.
Despite, always. I mean, I've just held to the long established wisdom of never buy the protection plan.
Well, here's a pro tip though, if you want one, since you can buy AppleCare for something that you've purchased within a year of buying it.
Mm-hmm.
You can usually save money by buying the AppleCare protection plan on Amazon instead of buying it from Apple.
Oh wow, huh?
Yeah, because they'll sell it like marginally cheaper. It's never as expensive.
Cool. Okay,
it's a good tip.
Yeah, very good. All right, so to start this show for real here, we have some lists that we're going to call Emery's stuff and Alan's stuff. We considered other names for the. for these segments, but we ended on our stuff.
Standards and practices intervened.
Yes. we're gonna start with Emery's stuff. You got a few things you wanted to go through here, just sort of updates, things that we've been gone for a couple weeks here, and I guess things have accumulated. You want to run through a couple things here?
First of all, I hate the holidays.
Okay, I love the holidays.
Deal. I know.
Yeah, we've been through this.
Couldn't be more wrong about that. But so a couple things briefly. We talked about email not too long ago, and I mentioned that I use this email client called MailMate, and I love MailMate. I think it's great, and I like the developer, and I encourage people that are really, really into email to check it out and potentially to buy it, because I think the developer is really on the ball and has some really good ideas, and I like where it's headed. So it occurred to me, though, while I was traveling, that I really like what MailMate is becoming, but I already like Postbox. And I think you mentioned it when I was talking about, hey, I've got this new email client I really like, and I should talk about sometime. And you were like, oh, is it Postbox? And I said, no, Postbox, please. You know, but I was very dismissive, and I was wrong to dismiss, because there was a package on Mac Update not too long ago. Like, you know how they do those bundles?
Yeah, yeah.
We should do a bundle.
Well, the bundles, from what I've read, the bundles are typically not all that great for the developers.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of them,
you know, a lot of the bundle organizers kind of strong arm developers into doing it. It's kind of like a Groupon thing, you know.
Okay. Well, maybe we could find a way to make it a little less painful.
Okay.
Maybe smaller volume, I think. Okay. I don't know. But anyways, I've always thought that'd be fun to do, but maybe, you know, I don't know how the other guys are doing it. But so this bundle I picked up included a license for Postbox.
Okay.
And I hadn't used it for quite a while, so I checked it out because they had a new release like a couple months ago, and I really like it. I think it's great. And if you're a Gmail user, it's really good. But I've really liked it. Good support for keywords and things like that for labeling messages. If you use Apple's IMAP server and OS X server, which I think me and like half a dozen other people probably. It works pretty well and performs well, integrates with the address book well. Yeah, I really like it. The other thing, Pinboard, which is like my bookmark service, they say it's social bookmarking for introverts, which I really like a lot. And I like their service model where the more people use the service, the more it costs. And that's really just to help them kind of scale it in terms of like their infrastructure costs and things like that. And we kind of know the people that are responsible for it. So I don't know if that's important to mention or not, but they're really smart cookies and they know what they're doing. The great use for it that I had, though, was I had my in-laws have like a gift exchange thing. So they do like, you know, put your name in a hat, that kind of thing.
Oh, and then, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we also do like a swap thing. So
the,
I
the
had,
kind that is highly organized but always breaks down. Is this what I'm thinking of? No?
Oh, probably. I don't know. But it worked pretty well. And okay. I think this was the first year that they had ever done like a swap thing. But I like it a lot because it's very low pressure. And also because first of all, I want everyone for Christmas to, I would like to participate in a non-proliferation treaty on gifts.
Oh, see, I love giving gifts. That's the best part of the holidays.
I like it too, but I don't like all the pressure. And I constantly feel all this pressure. And I still haven't done like all my gifts. Like there's still people I want to get stuff for that I haven't yet.
Uh-huh.
And it's just because it's a hectic time of year and I got enough things going on and I got just a million and one things that are driving me bananas. So the good thing about Pinboard is that a lot of things that I like, I'm hard to shop for because first of all, I'm a finicky ass that, you know, hates just about everything. Secondly, anything that I want, I just buy.
Yeah, that has happened to me too lately.
Yeah. So the nice thing about Pinboard is that there's a lot of things out there that I haven't purchased for myself yet, or that I'm just kind of on the fence about, or, you know, something that I never, if there's something that's just too much of an extravagance or what have you, I can bookmark it into Pinboard and I assign a keyword, like a tag to it, called wishlist. And then I'd also put in like, you know, $1 sign for inexpensive, two for, you know, the $50 mark, and then $3 signs for 100 up. So depending on how generous someone wants to be, they can kind of eyeball the list that way. And then I also added a keyword. I also added a tag. I keep saying keywords. I always say tag. I started also adding a little or a lot for how much I like something. So whoever drew my name, and it was my brother-in-law's girlfriend, mm-hmm. and she ran down, like, it worked really well. I got awesome loot. I got a microphone stand. I got some, like, whiskey stones.
Oh, yeah, so, yeah. That keeps the whiskey cold by...
Without watering it down.
Without watering it down, yep.
Got that. What else did she get me? Oh, and I got Uncharted, the original Uncharted.
Oh, wow, these are great gifts.
I know, right? And it was on my list, and so, you know, whatever. So then after the holidays, I went through and I ticked off all the things and took them off my wish list if I got them, and yeah. I think it's a pretty cool idea. The only problem I could see it having is that, you know, you kind of have to, like, groom it periodically, and if you, you know, get something off of your list, you have to make sure that you remember to go take it off. But
right.
My favorite gift so far, though, I got a gift from my wife. It was, have you heard of Bellroy?
No.
They make wallets and stuff. They make really
cool. Okay, yeah.
I got something called the Takeout Wallet from them. And I like these big like checkbook wallets.
Oh, dear.
And then, well, here's the thing. It's awesome. But you should check it out. We got to put it in the show notes.
Okay.
But what's great about it is that there is a smaller pocket wallet that slides inside of it and, like, kind of attaches through these, like, crazy magnets. There's like these two magnetic pads inside that hold it in place, and then you can pull it out.
Okay.
It's called the Takeout Wallet is because when you just want to go out and you don't want to carry all your cards, you just take out the small thing that folds over into your pocket. It's great.
This sounds so ridiculous, but I guess that makes sense.
I'm going to murder you. This is like the greatest thing I've ever
gotten. You have a wallet inside your wallet.
Yes. Yeah, it could not be more perfect. And the fact that you are laughing because you don't understand this.
No, I think I understand.
You gotta check it out.
Fairly well.
It's fantastic. It's so well made.
The outer wallet is like, I mean, this sounds like the George Costanza scene.
No. Well, okay. That's where you're wrong.
Okay, so, all right.
The outside part is like a very large, it's not like a big folded over wallet. It's like, are you familiar with what, like a jacket or a coat wallet, like a dress wallet? Like,
I get, I can picture it. Yeah.
You don't have to picture it.
Okay. All right. Well, link in the show notes. Link in the show notes.
Yeah, I'll do that. I'll do that. And then I'm going to, yeah. Oh, here. Oh, so, what else do I got? Traveling is terrible. I hate airports.
Yeah. Well, I kind of like airports.
I like the Detroit airport, but I didn't get to see it this time. I went to O'Hare, and there were too many people like hanging out, sitting at tables in restaurants. And, you know, my special lady can't get a seat, and that's not going to happen. Huh. So I had to glare at people and make them move. And then there was
not pretty good at the glaring.
Oh yeah.
You like your glaring technique.
A level 85 glare. The best part though about the travel was that while we were in Boston, we stayed at one of the places we stayed was a hotel that I really liked a lot. And I actually wrote something about it on Kvetch. And it's, yeah, it was great. Had a really fantastic meal. The restaurant there was great. If you're ever in Boston, stay at Hotel Marlowe. But the airport situation is out of control. And on the way home, because we had extra stuff in the suitcase, right? So we were kind of traveling light on the way there. But when we got to the airport, our bag was too heavy. So the boy genius at the United counter said, "Oh, I'm sorry, sir. You know, your bag's too heavy. You'll have to pay $100. So they're going to charge me. First of all, they already charge you $25 to even have a bag, uh-huh. which is ridiculous. And then they're going to charge me $100 because my bag weighs 8 pounds more than 50 pounds.
Huh.
So we proceeded to like haul things out of the suitcase that are, you know, visibly and obviously heavy.
Yeah.
To put the carry on.
Okay,
right.
Here's your problem.
Okay. Well, tell me.
You checked that.
They also tried to sell me another suitcase, which I'm also furious about.
Okay. Your problem?
Yeah.
You checked bags. That's your problem.
What am I going to do?
I never check bags. Never. Well, I went to...
For like a week and there's...
I spent almost a week in Europe and I didn't check a bag.
For me to look this good. Have you seen me? I'm really handsome. And my wife is gorgeous, and she's got real expensive shampoo that TSA stole from us.
Well, yeah.
Because we had to take it out of the suitcase, and then didn't even occur. Like, it's one of those things where like you're kind of in a hurry, right? And this guy's like, "Oh, it's gonna be $100 to take this on the plane." And then they were trying to sell us a second bag for $50.
Well, okay, I like airports because they are a puzzle and a challenge. Right, like there are rules to the airport, some spoken, some unspoken, it is up to you. It is your challenge, a challenge posed to you to overcome these rules and have an enjoyable travel experience.
I forgot to check and see if we were actually on the television, but like when we got to the airport, when we were leaving, we were interviewed by like a local news.
Oh, really?
News Center 5, whatever. I don't know. Yeah, and they were asking us like about our travel plans and everything, and I don't know if they found me interesting or not, but to the people of Moline, if you're listening, I hope you saw me.
Nice.
And, yeah. And I don't know, like, so we're trying to like pull these things out of the suitcase and move them into the carry-ons, and I could do a whole show about how awesome my Mission Workshop Rambler is, mm-hmm. in terms of like how great it was to have that bag. But we're taking the things that are obviously heavy, and that was the critical error. So by taking the things that are heavy out, we inadvertently also took things out, like my wife's Bumble and Bumble shampoo and conditioner, which is, I think it was like $120 when she had to replace it.
Okay, here's your other problem.
Yeah, well, first of all, don't tell me.
Okay.
And I defy you to tell her.
I mean, that is approaching by weight the cost of some precious metals.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's not like inkjet. Like inkjet cartridges are worth more.
True. Yeah.
Than, you know, diamonds.
Yeah.
So, and then I got SMS spam and I threw a fit, and I have to track that down, and we'll talk about that another time. I think that's my update. I hate the holiday. I hate travel. There's too many expectations on me. I like my family, but I feel a lot of pressure this time of year.
Okay. I like the holidays. I like travel. The challenges. The challenges of travel and the joys of the holidays and the challenges of the holidays.
I'm in my 30s. My parents, I'm an only child of seven.
Yeah.
Parents were divorced when I was two.
Yeah.
And I have halves and steps and in-laws scattered all over the place.
That is a challenge.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. My stuff, other than enjoying the holidays, I actually, as part of enjoying the holidays, me and a friend went through all six Star Wars movies. See, this is why I enjoy the holidays. I do things like this.
Well, you have a month off.
True. Yeah. Almost a month. we took a day and, started around noon, finished around 4 a.m. Watched the six Star Wars movies all the way through. Started with one. We debated between starting with one or starting with four. I had seen a bumper sticker the previous day that said, episode four comes first. It's just good parenting, which I thought was a pretty good bumper sticker.
I love it.
And I'm not normally a fan of bumper stickers. So anyway, but that despite that, we actually started with one because we knew that if we started with four and watched four, five, and six, there would really be no motivation to go back and watch bad movies. But if we started with one, we'd get to three and we'd go, okay, now the good ones. And we'd actually want to watch the rest of the movies.
And to be fair, I mean, three is not horrible. It's not good. But.
Oh, no. So here are my ratings, right? I've got one is terrible. Two is terrible. Three is all right. Four is excellent. Five is excellent. Six is good. Those are my ratings.
Yeah. I mean, I really like Return of the Jedi. I mean, there's a lot of people that don't, but.
Yeah. I mean, it surpassed the first three, I think. So it's got that going for it.
First of all, it is absolutely better than the prequels.
But okay.
I still want to get this letter campaign to like get power of attorney over George Lucas's movies.
Yeah. Here's the other thing that I was going to talk about here is that this was the recently released Blu-ray edition. The Star Wars films. And that means that it's based on the special edition or whatever it's called, where they added a bunch of new digital effects and changed things around and all
made
these...
Han a puss.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I can't.
I know. I mean, like, not only adding visual things, but changing around plot elements. Like,
it's kind of cliche to like get so worked up about it, but it really is a big deal.
Yep.
Like I can't even believe I'm hearing myself say that, but it is really.
I mean, this is a very important.
It establishes Han Solo in badass.
Yeah. Oh, you're talking about that specific specific thing. Okay.
That thing in particular is hugely wrong now.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so apparently Greedo shot first now, but whatever. But overall, right, Star Wars is a really important thing because it, you know, defined, I mean, there are all manner of movies that followed in Star Wars footsteps. It made billions and billions of dollars. It's this really, really, it's this franchise that permeates so many aspects of media and entertainment. So when George Lucas goes back and messes with the original movies to the point where you actually can't find, or you can barely find, a version out there that is the unadulterated original cuts that were shown in theaters when the original movies were screened. You can't go out there and find that. It actually doesn't physically exist. The negatives have been so chopped up and rearranged at this point that it's difficult to find a true copy of that. There's things that get close, but certainly this Blu-ray edition was filled with random digitally inserted creatures here and there that really didn't add anything, right? So, except a digitally inserted creature, which is
it's like going back and getting the Bible and then adding a whole bunch of new stuff to the Bible.
Yeah. I mean, that has probably been done.
But
it's like doing that and then destroying the original, right?
Yeah, you can no longer read the King James Bible anymore. It doesn't exist. Now we have the new Laser Bible.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think the King James Bible, you know, was itself probably a you know, a version of that, in that let's get rid of the old stuff and this is the new standard.
It is. Yeah.
Right. But with this, it's like this whole, the entirety of Star Wars is so controlled by the whims of George Lucas. It's like, yeah, this digitally inserted creature needs to be here. And then it is there for eternity. So,
yeah. Did you see that Vader died?
Vader?
Yeah, the guy that played the guy James that was Earl in the Jones? Darth Vader. No, James Earl Jones, as far as I know, is still alive. Oh, but the guy that was actually in the suit.
Oh, really?
Not the voice actor, but the guy that actually did all the lightsaber fighting and all that. I think he died on Sunday.
Oh, wow.
He was like 89. That means he was like in his 60s when he was Vader.
Wow. He died the day before my Star Wars marathon.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow. And I didn't even know. Anyway, so there was that. And then I also bought and played a whole lot of Steam sale games.
I gotta tell you, I'm a little upset that you didn't like play the stuff I bought you. Any of the id Software stuff? Yeah.
I will. I will play them. It is a matter of what?
I played the Batman. I love the Batman.
I know. It's a matter of timing. I had a lot of Steam sale objectives to complete. I did. I mean, that was all my game time was devoted to that. So
I'm not going to bust your balls too bad. I mean, in the last 2 weeks, I think I played somewhere like around 20 hours of The Old Republic, so I'm not giving you a hard time.
Yep. Yeah, there's that too. After the Star Wars marathon, I was totally psyched to play some Old Republic as well. Anyway. All right. But I like the Steam sale because it lets me try a bunch of random games that I wouldn't try otherwise. There's some really cool stuff out there. Frozen Synapse, very cool. Swords and Soldiers HD is actually, I think, an up-res mobile game, but it's totally awesome.
I don't know what that means. What's an up-res mobile?
An up-resed mobile game. So it's like, I think it originally came out for the iPhone or iPad or something, and this is a PC version of it. But it's really good.
We should do maybe talk about like iOS and like Windows Mobile or Android gaming or something at some point.
Yeah, sure. We're talking about the PlayStation Vita later in the show, but
I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, but we can talk more specifically about phone-based gaming at some point, definitely.
It's like the biggest, I mean, there's more iPhones than any other console, right?
Probably, yeah.
The
PC would arguably be a more widely disseminated console, if you call it a console. But
yeah, that's true.
I mean, if you call iPhone a console, then you can call a PC a console. So
that's true.
Yep.
It's harder to develop for, though.
True.
There's more variables. It's like writing software for Android, where you've got to. Well, I guess you don't have to support that many devices because nobody else does.
Right.
They're all abandoned within 12 months, so I guess you can just do that.
All right.
CES.
Speaking of devices, CES is next week, where often many devices are unveiled or demoed to the public for the first time, things like that.
Yeah.
Gigantic electronic show. Is it in Las Vegas or LA? I always forget.
Las Vegas.
Okay. It's it's E3, the video game thing that's in LA. So CES is huge. This year's hot items apparently are tablets, ultrabooks, and smartphones.
Yeah, they didn't get that memo, huh?
Yeah, no.
Lots of tablets, ultrabooks, and smartphones. Okay. Prediction: none of them are going to be the iPad, the MacBook Air, or an iPhone.
Yeah, that is.
They're
true.
All going to be devices that are clearly designed to attract people who would otherwise be buying an Apple product.
Yeah, and here's Apple is not going to be at CES because they don't need to be at CES.
I don't think they ever are.
No, they never are. May have been back in like the olden days, but.
No. Not even like a Comdex. I don't think they ever attended any of those.
I mean, they're not doing product announcements at even Macworld. I mean,
they don't even go to Macworld.
No, they just have their own events because the press shows up for them. They say we're releasing a new product and all of the press is there.
That's the hilarious irony, is that they no longer even go to Macworld.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, but so we're going to have a CES filled with tablets, ultrabooks, and smartphones, none of which will be bought in significant quantities. So
yeah, I mean, I like you know, my MacBook Air is probably like, well, actually, not probably. I mean, it is absolutely the best computer I've ever owned.
Hmm.
It is, without a doubt, an exceptional machine.
Good. Which is well. The 13-inch?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Performs well. It's reliable. I used to have I had an 11-inch MacBook Air, the previous generation, and I loved it. Like, I probably like that more than the 13, but I'm getting old. And the 13-inch display is kind of important.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I think it is without question, like, the best notebook you can buy. Like, I don't care if you're a Windows guy or a Mac guy, it really doesn't matter. Like,
you can run either on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yep. And that's the one you want.
Yeah. And not, I mean, not that expensive.
No, they're cheap.
Yeah.
They're cheap. And yep. I think one of my cousins just bought like a MacBook Pro, and I think she wanted an Air, but it's not a great solo machine. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, it's not a machine that you can have and just have that, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. So with regards to the CES stuff, I guess it's probably better than last year. I mean, last year, I guess 3D was the thing. It was a bunch of 3D TVs and 3D smartphones and whatever.
Look, it's a television that you get to wear special glasses for.
Yeah.
You want that living room?
So fortunately, so that has died.
Share your lice with everybody else that walks through your house?
Terrible. I just, so I hope it just goes away completely.
That's up there with like smell-o-vision.
Yeah.
Just bury your nose in the pixels.
Anyway.
Box strap.
But yeah, stay tuned next week for some CES stuff.
I'm sure there'll be some announcements that are.
If something interesting happens, we will cover it on the show.
It's usually a good show for, like, you know, TiVo has had some announcements at CES.
A TiVo announcement right about now. Something, yeah, you know. Kidding. Yeah, you know, a new series or something.
There could be that. I mean, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm really worried about them, though. I mean,
TiVo?
Yeah.
Who do you think they're? I mean, they're still the leader, right?
Yeah, except that, you know, they.
You think people are going to video on demand, basically, and just,
well, yeah.
Just stream, like, everything?
Yeah, because nobody wants to play with TiVo for whatever reason. Either they've got just a terrible negotiator, or. They don't have a game plan that the cable companies and everybody wants to participate in. Because, you know, they worked with, like, DirecTV for a while, and I don't think they do anymore. But, you know, Comcast and Cox and those guys, like, it would have been perfect. But the cable company has to control every aspect of your television viewing. And they have to, because they have to monetize it. And they have to do that because they're trying to wring out every last penny that they can from a service that they know. And you and I know, isn't going to be around in 10 years.
Yep. I don't know if they know.
Oh, they know. They have to
know. They know? Okay.
They're building up these, I mean, the cable companies are investing hugely in video on demand.
You're right. Service. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So, I mean, they know that, like, broadcast television is dead as a doornail.
Yeah.
I mean, look what they put out. I mean, they don't have anything. I mean, the reality TV stuff has been going on for over 10 years now, and it's all the same show, and they're all terrible, and they cancel the good stuff because, you know, nobody watches it on TV. They'd rather watch it some other way.
Yeah. Well, I see maybe TiVo doing something interesting and different, you know, coming out with something that you know, a new series or, you know, new, but with some feature that's really cool.
They already have, like, you know, multiple tuner high definition recording,
which is great. Oh, it's so good. It works so well.
I think what they need to do is, I mean, if I'm TiVo at this point, I think, I mean, the cable companies also make it so difficult to work with them because, like, they stand in the way of cable card.
Yep.
They do all sorts of nonsense there. They require these idiotic decoder boxes because, you know, people steal cable or whatever. And I don't know, like, it'd be really cool, I think, if over the air HD. I mean, that's the thing, though, is that I think it's dead too. So I don't know what I would do with TiVo. What do you do at that point? Because I don't believe that the business is going to be viable. So, yeah.
Huh. All right. Well, anyway, CES, stay tuned. TiVo's going to make an announcement. You heard it here first. Yeah. No, we have no idea. We'll see. All right. Let's see. In other electronics news.
What do you think of the rumors about Apple TV and IT and all that? I mean, there are people that are saying that CES and, you know, there's an announcement at the end of the month and maybe it's related to this TV thing because apparently Steve Jobs wanted televisions to be like apps.
I mean, kind of
back up a little bit. Like, I think one of the, and I think he's probably right about this, is that I think a lot of content should be distributed in a way that is like an app. Like, I think I would rather run an HBO app on my Apple TV in the living room than I would ever feel like subscribing to cable TV and paying $12 for HBO. Sure. I would much rather click an HBO icon on my Apple TV and buy shows a la carte.
Wait, wouldn't you rather have an app that just does all shows? You know, HBO, Netflix.
Not necessarily, because I would like to be able to kind of mix and match. Like, I don't want one app that has all these networks. I would like to be able to say, like, I like HBO and I like Showtime, but I don't give a rip about Cinemax or ESPN. I don't want Fox News, but I'd like, you know, something else. Right?
So you're saying the apps facilitate an a la carte model that is way different from the cable model.
Yes, the cable model, as far as my understanding, as just a lowly, stupid consumer that channel surfs and whatever.
Right.
I think, you know, when you're buying cable, you're paying $30 a month or whatever for your service.
Or way more than that.
or way more. And that, you know, the vast majority of it, you're never going to watch. And like most of it, in my case, I mean, you're like watching sports. I don't. So,
yeah.
You know, ESPN, I don't really care to give them money. And there's a lot of, like, one of the reasons I got rid of cable is that it didn't feel like perpetuating that mythological choice.
Mm.
It's an illusion. Like, there is no selection there. It's all the same crap. And then someone else makes money no matter what, if you watch it or not. And I don't want to keep them afloat. There's a lot of people out there that I want to see go down, and I don't want to be propping them up.
Yep. Yep.
I would much rather have like an app model for distribution. It's like with like magazines and stuff. Like, I like the app store model. And I mean, you know, there was that talk at Chaos Computer Club last week where there Cory Doctorow's thing about how people use computers and things like that. And control.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was great.
That was great. We should probably link to that too.
But yeah, we should.
And we could probably talk about it next week maybe. But but one of the takeaways from that for me was, like, you know, there's a lot of things that I'm okay with. Apple's a company that I'm willing to get a lot of that control over to.
They'll do the right thing with it, I guess.
It feels that way to me. And I'm starting to kind of not feel that way about Google. And I used to.
Hmm.
But now I'm like thinking, you know, I have an awful lot of stuff in Gmail. So I'm starting to pull some of that back.
But I mean, won't there come a point where that happens with Apple too? I mean,
it could, but I can also, I mean, what's nice about Apple, right, is that it's easy for me to run my own.
But I mean, what if you buy, you know, your $3,000 Apple TV and you're fully invested in the ecosystem?
Okay.
You know, I was thinking the other day, I own on my iPhone a $50 GPS app. So, yep. So immediately the cost for me to switch to another phone platform is $50 extra.
Well, in my case, it's even worse though, because I've got a lot of applications that there is no analog for anywhere.
Right.
So you know, OmniFocus.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I can't have OmniFocus on any other device. DevonThink, I can't have that anywhere else. You know, my text editors and stuff, sure, I can find something that'll work. And I could get, you know, a task manager, right? Mm-hmm. But it won't be OmniFocus. OmniFocus is, you know, the bomb.
Yeah.
So there's I mean, I would, it's like when I was talking to someone asked, you know, about the Two Cows phone service or Republic Wireless or what's it called? I'm sorry.
Which one?
The Two Cows phone service.
I don't remember.
Shoot. We're terrible.
I know. But I remember you mentioning it.
Yeah, we're
I don't know. I just do Google search and I did not come up with anything. Oh, Ting.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Ting. Don't tell Elliot that we didn't know. Okay. But the, yeah, I mean, they're like, you know, well, what would it take for you to move over? And I'm thinking to myself, like, it would take an iPhone. Hmm. You know, like, I can't at this point. There's no, first of all, I can't give up the platform. And I'm okay with that because there isn't anything better on the other end.
Yeah, but what about the case where something better does come along?
Then I would have no problems moving.
Okay.
Because I've done it before, and a lot of people have too, because a lot of people that move to iOS or move to macOS yeah. from other systems were happy to do so because it made it worth their while. But I'm not going to be able to say, I'm just going to make a purely dollars decision and say, like, well, I'll switch to Ting and a Motorola droid blah
right
to run software that I don't want to use just to save, you know, because I did the math, and if I moved my plan over to Ting, I would save like $800 a year. But that's $800 I don't want to spend, because yeah. it would lower my quality of life. It would make my, that $800 is worth more than that to me.
Yeah,
to stay.
Yeah.
even though I'm with AT&T and they're absolutely screwing me at every opportunity. So yeah, I mean, it's I don't know. I don't mind being locked in when the getting's good. So I mean, you know, if Ubuntu or Red Hat or Fedora or Microsoft had something that was you know, more attractive for whatever reason, and maybe it's this, you know, open access thing or whatever. I mean, I don't know. It's less of an issue now. Like, you know, my cousin was buying a MacBook, and my aunt was all concerned, like, you know, is it compatible? Like, what does she do? She's like, Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like, everything you do is like on the web anyway. So, you know, most of what she's doing, it doesn't really matter. Yeah. But even if, you know, things like Office applications, things like that, like, there's a lot of people out there that are still thinking, like, you know, it's 1992 and you had to like transform your files from one format into another because they weren't compatible, and Microsoft Office, you yep. know, or Microsoft yep. Word 5 versus, you know, whatever was on Windows and WordPerfect, and doing all these, like, you know, it doesn't matter now. Like, people are starting to adopt, first of all, open formats, which is great. And secondly, there's some parity there on all the platforms. So
for all the walled gardens that have come up, it is way easier now than it used to be.
Yeah. I mean, there are still people who make what are essentially bad decisions to throw themselves into a corner where they cannot escape. But yeah.
Hmm. All right. Well, yes.
Speaking of walled gardens, what's this PlayStation?
Yeah. So PlayStation continues to build its own walled garden in the mobile gaming platform space.
Hooray.
Yeah. So there's this PlayStation Vita, which is the successor to the PSP, the PlayStation Portable. Mm-hmm. And this is coming after the launch of the Nintendo 3DS, which apparently didn't sell all that well because they had a price drop. What's that?
It's bombing.
They had a price drop very soon after the launch. I think it's probably doing okay, but it's nowhere near as successful as the original Nintendo DS. And so the Vita comes out in Japan a couple weeks ago, and it sold 392,000 units in its first 2 weeks, which is apparently rather disappointing.
I was going to say, it doesn't sound really great.
No. And it's coming to the U.S. on February 22nd. And the real issue here is, so this is a $250 device, and each game for it is anywhere between $25 and $40. Yeah, and when you've got an iPhone that maybe you already own, or any other handheld gaming platform, like we were talking about earlier, and each game is like between $1 and $10, is it even a useful notion to think about buying a dedicated handheld gaming system?
I think the software is arguably better on the handheld systems.
It's higher quality games, typically.
And it's usually because there's more production involved, and they kind of make it a more complete thing because they're, in a lot of cases, they, you know, from a console background.
I mean, there is an Uncharted, a full-on Uncharted game launching with the PlayStation Vita.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, you can play it. It is... as an Uncharted game would be on a console, and you can play it on the Vita, and it's a full new game. It's not a port of an existing one or anything like that.
But it's still a mobile device that people aren't going to want to carry. Like,
right. That's a big problem.
This?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I mean, I like one thing that Nintendo did really well with the DS was when they let you do things like run game, even on the GameCube, when you could like hook it up to your console and then take things with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that was really kind of pioneered with the Sega Dreamcast. Because like the VMUs, like the little modules for saving your game that fit to the controller, had like a little LED or LCD display on it.
Yep, yep.
And it also had like, you know, two buttons, and then you could take stuff away from your game console. So like if you had like a little widget, and it, you know, it was totally stupid, but
there's no reason that a phone couldn't do that as well. I mean, the part that's mobile, other than maybe not having the right controls, you know, not having the right physical control elements.
That's true.
Other than that, I mean, a phone is entirely capable of doing the sorts of things it would need to do, you know, mobile gaming, to create mobile gaming experiences.
That's true. But I think the gameplay would probably be a little bit better on the Vita than it would be on the iPhone.
Like, definitely.
In spite of, I mean, I've seen some pretty good controls. Like, there's an Asteroids game called, I shouldn't say Asteroids, but there's a game very similar to Asteroids called like Meteor Storm HD or something like that. And I love playing it on the iPad.
Well, in a lot of cases, it's if you develop the game with the a touch interface in mind, then it works pretty well. Yeah. But a lot of the times you get these ports of games that were not developed for a touch interface, and those don't work well on a phone.
They're not great.
Yeah. So there is a gap there. But actually, for Christmas, someone gave me a Chrono Trigger classic game, but the iOS version, which is actually rather good. They did a good job in figuring out how to make natural controls that work pretty well.
Like, it would have been 3 or 4 years ago, I actually bought that for the DS.
Yeah, and the DS version of it is good as well.
As far as I know, it's like, you know, identical to the Super Nintendo version.
I think the DS version has cutscenes, which did not
appear. So it's even better.
Well, it depends on your perspective on things. They are anime cutscenes. So
I don't remember that.
I was impressed by that, and I'm very impressed by the library of games that are available on places like the iPhone App Store. You know, there's other things that need to be figured out still. I mean, the Game Center sucks on an iPhone. Game Center is not a good, social gaming in the sense of hooking up with friends and letting you play games together and that sort of stuff.
Anything that I can't use my Apple ID for it, right? Like, I have to have like a different login or some nonsense.
Yeah.
I've never like, anytime I get prompted for that or that stupid OpenFaint thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, cancel.
Yep. So there's still some things to be figured out, but so here's the other thing. This PlayStation Vita has the option to have a 3G connection on it.
Uh-huh.
As if this would be your mobile data device.
That's dumb.
Yeah. And it's got a web browser and that sort of stuff. And
so does a PSP.
PSP does have a web browser, yeah. But this is touchscreen, so you can actually interact with it as you would on an iPhone or something.
Does it have Flash?
I don't know. I don't care. No one cares. No one actually cares.
No. I think, you know, do you think there's like going to be a future time? Like, I keep thinking that maybe the 3DS will really mature when the Wii U comes out.
Oh, as like a companion thing?
Yeah, I keep hoping that, like, because I like the idea of the 3DS.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of. I mean, I guess I don't hate it.
Yeah.
I think it's a novel idea. It's not the first time that Nintendo has kind of went in this area, like the VR or whatever, mm-hmm. the Game Boy 3D, whatever the hell it was. What was it?
The Virtual Boy?
Virtual Boy, thank you.
Yeah.
I think my stepbrother had one. Just terrible. Just terrible. But you know, I think it's one of those things that like people want to experiment with a little bit. And I don't know. I keep thinking that maybe the device, the reason it's not doing so hot right now is because it doesn't have a fit. Like something like this needs to, because it's like you were saying, if you already have an iPhone or, you know, a capable Android device with good software available, then why do you want to carry around another device
yep.
to play $40 games? Yeah. And that's the other thing too, is like mobile gaming for me is usually a very casual affair. Like I don't want an involved 20-hour epic adventure.
Yeah, on because I'm like, right. You're gonna want to see that on a big screen. You're gonna want to have a nice sound system. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's tough. And based on the Japanese sales, it definitely does raise concerns. There's this article that we have linked in the show notes that cites an analyst, Michael Pachter, who basically says, no, not a concern at all. It'll be fine. Everything's fine. Don't worry. So there's differing perspectives on this. But certainly, I would say dedicated handheld gaming systems are probably not something we're gonna see around far into the future.
Again, I feel like this console, the Vita, I feel like it's another one of these instances where someone's like, well, we don't really have anything novel or innovative, and we're probably not even going to be doing this for a whole lot longer, so we should figure out a way just to wring as much out of this as we can now. And if everything feels kind of like half-assed and not really well-polished, and I don't know, I don't feel like they really put all their eggs in that basket, you know?
I will say one thing about the Vita. There, it has an incredibly impressive launch lineup of games. Yeah, there's some amazing stuff out there as far as games go. And it sounds like maybe that's what they devoted their attention to, because you know the 3DS had nothing, and that may have been part of the reason why it did so poorly out of the gate. The Vita has a Little Big Planet game, has that Uncharted game. Some like music and touch and music game that is apparently incredible and really fun to play. And it's got a big lineup of games that are all, not all, but that there's enough out there that anyone who wants to pick up a title, first day and play something really interesting can do that. Which is not something that happens all that often with console launches.
There's not even like more than half a dozen games for the PlayStation Move.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and usually with the 3DS, there's still not a great library. When the Xbox first launched or the Xbox 360 first launched, there was nothing. You know, there were a few games here and there, and nothing really compelling. So, it's rare to see a launch lineup this strong. So I do credit them for that. They definitely did not half-ass it on that front, but you may be right that, you know, a few things. I mean, the 3G stuff does not make that much sense to me at all.
It makes perfect sense to me because it's one business that's flailing and trying to figure out what the hell they're going to be doing for the next 10 years along with another one.
Right.
Which
right.
is the telephone company.
Yeah. It's like, oh, if we could just put it all in one.
Yeah. It's like a who's who of who lacks vision.
Right. Right. Oh, anyway. Speaking of, wow, great transition. Listen to this. Speaking of people who lack vision, number one on the list here, Best Buy.
We have our white glove service available.
They have, yeah, and the Geek Squad.
If you get the monster HDMI cable, it's a lot better.
It is. Well, you know, it's got the gold contacts, and gold is a really good conductor of electricity. So
is that so?
Yeah. So the gold contacts conduct electricity better, and so your TV's better.
Did you know that a digital signal is a digital signal?
I'm aware of the
fact. I'm giving you my retort.
Yeah.
The other one of my favorite things to do is when I have like a really pushy salesperson at like any retail establishment that sells electronics is that I got this from my mother. I ask them, you're gonna love this. I say, does this have LRF support? and they look at me and they're always like, oh, you know, I think so. And then I'm like, you know, can you find out? And then they try to find out and they can never figure out what LRF is.
Uh-huh.
It's little rubber feet.
Okay.
So when they come back, I'm like, well, I just lifted it up and sure enough, it's got LRF support. If it has like, you know, the little
nibs little rubber on the feet. Bottom. Yeah.
But that's what I do. I send them on errands to find out if something has LRF support. And then if they're brave enough to actually ask me what the hell, if they can admit to me that they don't know what LRF is.
But well, the pushier they are, the less likely they are going to admit that.
That's true.
Yeah. That's a very good technique. I like that.
Yeah. You know, Best Buy they're like Walmart, where they're just about anything you buy at Best Buy is a piece of crap. And it's just being like shoveled to people.
Well, I mean, Best Buy certainly sells things that you would want to buy, just you wouldn't want to buy them at Best Buy.
Well, I don't know. Like, I buy things at Best Buy when I'm in a when I can't wait.
Right. Yeah. And maybe I mean, maybe that's their niche. Like, maybe that's maybe they can still survive by selling things to people who can't wait.
Well, that's got to be the only people that are showing up there anyway.
Well, I guess people who don't have credit cards or any other way to buy online, you know, people under the age of 12.
No, I mean, they have parents.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
I don't know. I guess we should talk about the article. Like,
yeah, okay. Yeah.
I have kind of an axe to grind with Best Buy because one of my favorite music stores when I was a kid was put out because, you know, the Best Buy came in and was selling CDs super cheap. And, you know, my friends and I, like, one of our favorite record stores went out of business. And it was just, you know, it's the way it is. But it was always really depressing because, like, you know, the people at the Best Buy, they don't necessarily, they're not subject matter experts on music necessarily. I mean, they know top 40 stuff and they know.
Well, they know where to point you, maybe.
Yeah, but maybe.
They can't lend any insight, certainly.
And they also can't make good recommendations, you know, like I could walk into my record store and I could be like, yeah, I really liked X, you know, and then someone would make a recommendation for something and,
yeah.
Or they'd have something they could put on and yeah, I don't know. It really bummed me out. And then to see kind of this, decline and it's like this, just the push towards, the lowest common denominator, everything, everywhere. Yeah. Just
I'll run through the sort of overview of this article. So this was published in Forbes. And it's a pretty long article. It details some personal anecdotes of the author, of sort of his experience in Best Buy and his friend's experience in Best Buy, but then also looks at the overall direction that Best Buy is currently heading in and how they're kind of really focusing on defending their market share and not focusing as much on making profit. So it talks about that. It also talks about the issues with staff helpfulness, their return policy, and things like that.
What about that buyback program they have?
They have a buyback program?
They got something going on they're launching where they want to, like, you can, like, they'll buy, like, your old crap.
Hmm.
But they don't really give you much money for it.
Well, I mean, I guess Amazon's got something like that, too.
Do they really?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, typically, no one's going to give you that much money for it, and they're going to make a big profit on turning it around and selling it used for the most part.
That's fine.
I didn't know Best Buy did it though, huh?
Yeah, they just started doing this.
Like, I mean, that's like GameStop lives on that.
Yeah,
you know, GameStop's business yeah. model is buy people's old games really cheap and then sell them to other people for almost the price you would buy a new game for.
Yeah,
so
which I'm fine with.
Yeah. Yep.
Another
overriding point to this article was Amazon isn't killing Best Buy. Best Buy is killing itself.
Yeah.
That's a paraphrase, but basically that, you know, Amazon is just looking at how do we make a really good experience for customers and how do we get really good at selling things to customers. And Best Buy could easily focus on those same things. Not easily, but Best Buy could certainly devote effort to focusing on those same things and doing it right, but they are choosing not to. They're choosing to focus on things like selling protection plans or selling a video on demand service when the person's not necessarily interested in it, things like that.
Their, like, store experience and, like, trying to find something consistently on their website versus their store is a nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, another thing pointed out in this article is apparently over this holiday season, at one point, they had to delay a large number of customer orders, and they issued an apology basically saying, well, we couldn't meet demand,
we were selling stuff we didn't have.
Yeah.
That's really what they're saying.
Right. Exactly.
we're going to call this a pre-order.
Right. And it's like, I mean, this is the sort of thing that the biggest electronics retailer, I guess, should have figured out is how yep. many items they can sell during the holidays and get them to customers in time.
They worked so hard to take out Circuit City, CompUSA. I mean, they bludgeoned.
Yeah.
I don't know. They had to give away everything, apparently, because now they're left holding a pretty big bag.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
you know, without they managed to successfully take out their competition, but now what?
Yeah. I don't know. Well, Fry's is still around, you know, and they're, I think they're doing okay.
Where you are. I mean, nobody else has them.
Oh, really?
There's no Fry's out here.
No way.
There's no Fry's on the East Coast. Oh, I've never seen one. I've never been to a Fry's.
How do you survive?
I don't know. Oh, we have Micro Center.
Yeah, no, Fry's is on top of things. But, okay. Yeah, I mean, Best Buy is certainly the, the only player at this point, really. I mean, Walmart, I guess, has electronics, and Target has electronics. Yeah, but Best Buy is supposed to be... I mean, the reason you would go to Best Buy is ostensibly because they would have detailed product availability and knowledge within the realm of electronics.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that is not so much the case.
No, but that's also kind of, to be fair, I mean, that's something that's dwindling everywhere, like even at the Apple store.
I mean,
if you stand back, I mean, like, can you say it that today the genius that you meet is the same quality that you would have had 5 years ago?
No, yeah, and I talked about this on a show a long time ago. Yeah, I mean, the quality of geniuses in the Apple store has definitely gone down, either because they're expanding significantly or because they've got to serve a whole lot more different areas now.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
But, I mean, you know, there's no doubt. I mean, Apple offers a satisfying retail experience, though.
That's true. They are consistently good.
Yeah, Best Buy does not. you don't enjoy spending time in a Best Buy.
That's true. I mean, my local Best Buy is pretty good, and they've taken good care of me, and they've handled returns just fine.
Yeah, I should note, I've never really had a problem at a Best Buy.
But I have not, however, had an experience there that was encouraging enough that I would, you know, talk to people about it.
Right.
Like, oh, I had a really good time at the Best Buy.
It's more, you know? it is there out of necessity once in a long while. Yeah.
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 It's, you know, whereas if I go to the Apple store, it's something will happen. I'll have an interaction with an employee that is good enough that I want to talk about it. Just like the Hotel Marlow in Boston. Like, I don't really have brand loyalty with hotels.
Yeah.
I like, you know, there's good hotels. I've stayed at some good ones. I like, you know, in Vegas, I like the Bellagio, and I like Wynn, and I like Encore. And then there's, you know, I like the W. And then in Chicago, I like the West End. I know it's not like, you know, super fancy, but it's a nice hotel. And then, but I would never, like, at all cost stay there. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm very bottom line oriented when I'm getting a hotel room. So, the Marlow, though, I really liked. And I think it's something that happens with the interactions with the people there that makes me want to go back. And it's the same thing with Apple. Whereas with Best Buy, it's, you know, where else am I going to get an 8 gigabyte SD card at 9 p.m.
Yep. Yeah. And so the overarching point of this article is that Best Buy is going to go out of business, and that it is currently a gradual process and will at some point happen suddenly. But basically they're doomed, that they will.
What about the Geek Squad?
I think they could potentially, if they drilled down and focused on one particular thing, like maybe Geek Squad, like this is, you know, we will help you set up your electronics for you. And they actually did that really well. Then maybe
they don't do that very well.
No, they don't. Or if it was, as I said earlier, if it was a thing like Best Buy place to get those last minute items, you know,
I should say my local Geek Squad is terrible. Like they're bad. I'm sure there must be a good group somewhere.
Oh, and I'm sure there are good Geek Squad employees out there. But it being tied to Best Buy and the way that service has to operate, I can't imagine they're deeply knowledgeable.
Just hang out some time and listen to what they're telling people that call in or that are waiting in line, and it's kind of bleak, or at least it is for me at my local store.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, and that Best Buy is going out of business gradually, not primarily because Amazon is directly killing it or online retailers are directly killing it, but because it's just failing to keep up. And there are things it could do to keep up, and it is not doing those things. So
yeah, it's got to invest. Like, I mean, they burned a lot of money to, like I said, I mean, it feels like they felt like they had to destroy their competition. Mm-hmm. And they've had to give up a lot to get there, and now they can't cover the check, you know?
Right, right.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, things like not having stuff available during the holidays, you know, not selling things they don't actually have. I mean, it's just...
They should give everybody that couldn't get what they actually ordered a complimentary BlackBerry playbook.
Yeah. Now at the low, low price of, what is it, $1 or $2.50?
Gotta be less than that. You know, it's like every week, have you noticed that like for the last month, there's been at least 3 stories in the news about like executives from RIM being thrown off planes or cuffed or attacked by air marshals for like getting drunk and like throwing fits and having a fight club.
You mentioned this.
I think it's hilarious.
I don't follow
everybody at that
RIM
company
as closely as
like,
you do, but
they've got to be losing their mind because like seriously, there's a drunken RIM executive on a flight right now being cuffed by a stewardess.
There's probably a drunken Best Buy executive out there too.
That's, could happen.
Yep, company's going slowly downhill.
No. Well, what are you gonna do?
Yep. All right. Well, hopefully we're in episode 20. We're doing well. We are going slowly or quickly uphill.
So great. We can almost drink.
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully the Hell Yeah show, despite this depressing material here, we are chugging on. The holidays are over, and we are ready to do some more Hell Yeah shows. So do stay tuned for further episodes. If you do want to contact us, the email is show@hellyeah.com. The web link is show.hellyeah.com. And
on the Twitter machine, you may reach us at hellyeahshow, twitter.com/hellyeahshow.
All right. That will do it for this episode of the Hell Yeah Show. We'll be back next week on either Monday or Thursday. Things tend to fluctuate, but we do try and get an episode out each week. So do stay tuned.